You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
And don't forget to support the Broadway Podcast Network by going to broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/Broadway Husbands. And we are currently still selling Broadway Life apparel merchandise. If you are looking, if you're a Broadway fan and you're looking for ways to support the Broadway community this time, go check out broadwaylifeapparel.com and you can get all kinds of beautiful, fancy designer t-shirts and hats and what else, Steven?
Phone cases.
Yeah. All to support the Broadway community right now. That's broadwaylifeapparel.com. All right. Steven had a really good idea.
All right. So on today's episode, we have really special guests, two of my most favorite people ever.
I would say you're their number one fan, or maybe
I'm their number one fan.
They're definitely your number one fan.
I hope they're my number one fan. So on today's guests, please welcome my mom and dad, Ed and Marcy.
Yay!
Say hello.
Hi there, I'm Marcy.
I'm Ed.
Yay!
And we are the Hannahs.
Whoa!
Yay!
All right, so, you know, I feel like I know everything about you, but at the same time, I don't.
I feel like you don't.
I don't know everything about you, but we're just going to talk mostly about your relationship, right? So we're going to go back. Well, no, wait. First, I want to hear you guys introduce yourselves just separately. So I want you to tell me your name, where you're from in Pittsburgh, and, you know, just a little bit about your childhood really quickly, like two sentences before you guys met each other. Mom, go first.
Hi. Okay, I'm Marcy Hanna. I grew up in an area called Bethel Park. It's about 45 minutes outside of the city of Pittsburgh. I'm one of four children, the second one born. I grew up in a very loving, caring family. Went to a public high school and after school went on to work and found the love of my life.
All right. That was very concise. Very good. That was a great, great start. Let's hear it, Dad. Let's hear your concise description before you met my mom. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Ed Hanna.
How do you spell that?
H-A-N-N-A.
Ed? What? How do you spell Ed?
E-D.
Okay, great.
This isn't a Chinese takeout.
His phone is going off in the middle of the interview.
All right. So anyhow, I grew up in Coryopolis, Pennsylvania.
Down in Cory.
The original Coryopolis. Now they entail Moon Township as Coryopolis. But I went to Coryopolis High School, and then I went into the service, the Navy, and then I came out of the service, and I met your mother at work.
Okay.
And we worked together.
Okay, so stop right there. So wait, so I'm already learning something new. I thought that you were in the service after. Oh, so you were in the service before you guys met.
No. We met first.
And then yeah, that's what I thought. All right, good. So you weren't in the service yet. So where were you working when you met each other? Dad, tell me where you were working and tell me about the first time you saw Marcella, what you remember about it. So what year was it?
67. Oh, yeah, that's right.
67, okay. Yeah. And where were you working?
at a law firm called Reed Smith Shaw and McClay, a very large law firm in downtown Pittsburgh.
What building was it in?
The Union Trust building, yeah.
All right. And now what was your job there?
I made duplicates of people's wills in the duplication machines.
What were those then? Were they like, they were like the...
No, it wasn't a hand
crank. How did you do that?
Crank. It was an offset duplicating machine. You had to ink up the rolls and make these mats. You had to shoot mats in case you... sometimes we'd run off several hundred copies and we'd have to collate them and put them together and make like booklets for... big time deals with like Mellon Bank and whatnot.
So you had to like print, like how did they make the tablets that you inked up?
Well, they originally, the secretary would make a draft and then she'd give them to us and we would actually take pictures of each page and make a mat which ran on a drum and it collected the ink and we would make like a couple hundred copies of that particular page, and like I said, we'd make a booklet.
Wow, that was like life before Xerox. Huh?
Yeah, wow. And so, and at the time, you were what, 18 years old? Is that right?
Yeah.
You were 18. And so, when was the first time that you noticed Marcella Bacon in the hallways of this facility?
Well,
or you, that you remember?
Well, before I worked in the duplicating room, we were what they call roadrunners. And we used, they used to give us packages, you know, like somebody needed, a lawyer needed something signed real quick or something like that. And they'd give them to us and we would deliver them. Sometimes we'd have to wait for a response and take them back to the lawyer. And we called ourselves roadrunners.
And so, when was the first time
you were running?
Saw,
were you road
running? You're road running.
Well, and you saw her.
You saw her. Like, what was the first time
no,
you saw
she
her?
She was a road runner at the time too.
So when was the first time, or what was the
so
first
the,
time that you
the
remember?
The road runners were co-ed at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So tell 60, us,
67.
Dad, tell us the first. What was the first time that you remember seeing?
It was
Mom.
November, because. We went out on a date.
Say it out loud. You can say it out loud.
But wait, you're not answering my question. When was the first time that you saw her that you remember seeing her in the hallways at work?
Well, it had to have been the first day because I thought we started together the same day.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
All right. So now, Mom... So you guys worked there together.
Correct.
And what is your first memory of seeing Dad?
We started there in September of 67. This is a big law firm. They had these real long hallways back then. It was very quiet and very prestigious. I'm walking down this hallway trying to find my way around. And I see this guy doing backflips down the hallway. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is professional office building. Who is this crazy person? And that was the first time we met. It was September of 67.
Wow.
And it took me from September to December to get him to ask me out. I worked on it.
Okay, so what were you, like, were you just trying to, like, talk to him or drop hints? Or, like,
well,
how were you trying to do that?
I was trying to talk to him and acting like I was lost. We had to deliver something. He was going the same direction. I said, can you help me find wherever it was we were going?
Do you remember this?
She set me up.
Do you remember that, Dad?
Yeah, but... I didn't realize she was setting me up for the
film. Go ahead.
So that's why I do things like that. We'd be sitting down, so if we had a break, I'd go over and start talking to him. Yeah.
Do you remember, like, what kind of conversations you had at that time? If, like, just small talk?
Just small talk. Yeah. Where'd you go to school? And, you know, right. Is there somebody in your life? Uh-huh. You know, brothers and sisters. Just a normal conversation. Okay. What do you like to do? That sort of thing.
What did he say when he, what did he like to do at that point? When he was 18, what did he
really,
say?
Well, at that point, I learned he was a ballet dancer, which I was totally in shock because I think myself, he doesn't look like a ballet dancer. My version of ballet dancer, of course, back then was very different.
Right.
Although he was very muscular, in really good shape.
Yeah.
And he informed me how he'd been in D.C. for a couple of years dancing and gotten his driver's license there and his his family life wasn't, his parents weren't real happy at the time anyhow. So he made him come back to Coriopolis and graduate from high school. So he was kind of like trying to find himself, figure out what he wanted to do. So he got a job and...
And then how... So he finally asked you out, and what happened? So he was like, hey, do you want to go out? What did he say
yeah,
to you?
Yeah, he said, let's go out. It was a Friday night, and we decided to go see a movie. It was called Wait Until Dark. It was a scary movie. At that time, the theaters were only in the city of Pittsburgh. You didn't have your theaters like you have in the outskirts.
Right.
So we made arrangements to go out, and I'm waiting and waiting, and he's 45 minutes late, and I thought, he stood me up. So I called a friend, and I said, he never showed up. Let's get ready and let's go out. Just then there's a knock at the door. And it was him.
Well, I mean, Coriopolis is kind of far from Bethel Park. Exactly. Yeah.
No, wait a minute. We have to clarify this.
Yeah, go ahead.
The number on the house doesn't correspond with the preceding houses. Okay?
That's very true.
It's like it stopped at like 40-something and then... Boom, there's her house, 60.
62. The numbers did not work.
Yeah. And it was on a curve. And I thought, I don't know if it's this house or not. But I lucked out and knocked on the right door.
Okay.
Because that before cell phones and GPS and even going by my directions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and at the time, well, still to this day, Mom, you're older than Dad.
I'm 2 years and 8 months older than Dad.
So what was, talk a little bit about, like, did you have any hesitation about going out with the younger guy at the time?
Yes, I did. I went home and talked to my mother. I said, I really like this guy at work. He's really cute. And finally asked me out, and I realized he's only 18. And I was 20 at the time. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? My mother said, oh, for heaven's sakes, it's a date. Just go out. You're not going to marry him. I said, you're probably right. So we went out.
Wow. So you go on this first date, and then what happens from there? Like, do you continue seeing each other regularly?
Well, wait. Okay. I want to ask Ed.
Oh, gosh.
Were you like, yeah, I scored an older woman. Like, I'm 18, I'm dating a 22-year-old.
No, she's not 22, she's 20.
I didn't really
20,
think about
sorry,
that.
20.
I didn't think about that.
You didn't?
I just liked her.
Yeah? Did you keep doing backflips just, like, because you knew she liked it?
Well, those hallways were great for that. They were long, and on either side, once in a while, these were those really thick Oriental rugs, you know? And it was in a big square.
Right.
And the length of those hallways were probably a couple hundred feet.
Did you ever hurt yourself?
Yes. And you know, that was fun. It passed the time.
I believe it. Okay,
so now you're dating, and about how long into this dating did one of you say, I love you? And who said, I love you first?
It was probably 4 or 5 months, and I probably said it first. I don't remember. It was probably that I said it first. So.
I can't remember that far back.
It was 4 or 5 months, but yeah, before we said, I'm sure I was the one that said, I love you first. Yes.
Yeah. And did he say it back quickly, yes, or was it like, whoa?
No, he didn't. He said it back right away.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. All right. And so then you dated for what? Like 2.5 years, 2 years?
Well, we were dated for about 11 months and we got engaged and we were engaged.
Talk about the engagement. Yeah. Cause I don't know anything about your proposal.
Who proposed? So how did that happen?
There really wasn't a proposal. We just started talking about getting married.
Yeah.
And we went to the village, South Hills Village, the shopping mall at the time. And there was a jewelry store there.
Bailey Banks and Biddle.
It's called Bailey Banks and Biddle.
Yeah.
And I found this ring, which it was a matching set, the engagement ring wedding band, which I really liked. At that time, he was, like I say, only 18. He had no credit. We had to get the credit in my name, and it was only $200 at that time, but $200 back in 1968 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we had to make payments on it for a couple months. We got it out in November.
In 69?
No, it was 68.
68,
November of 68, we got it out, and We went and told our parents, well, told my parents first we were getting married, which was fine.
Okay, and then what?
And then we went to Coriopolis. Well, I met his parents only once prior to that. It was Good Friday, which would have been Easter of that year, or April of that year. And we didn't have a good experience. They did, right from the beginning, I tell them they weren't too impressed with me. They weren't overly friendly or anything, so they never invited me back. So I did not see them all that summer, but although they knew we were dating. So we go over, and we tell them we're engaged, and it did not go well.
Well, so besides that, you're excited to get married, and it's 68, but you didn't get married until March of 70. So talk about your relationship during the engagement and what was going on, where you were working, and what happened before you got married.
Wait a minute, I got to tell you.
Go.
Before we actually got engaged.
Yeah.
I had a 65 Ford Mustang fastback.
Okay.
2+2. It was gorgeous. And you know, back in the day, we had antennas. I was getting ready to leave from my parents' house to go visit her.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom did not like my wife so much. She came out and asked me where I was going, and I told her to Marcia's house, and she got so mad, she took my antenna on my car, and she turned it into a pretzel and,
really?
And threw the back part at me. So I did the better part of valor, and I drove off to go pick up Marcia.
So mom wasn't kidding when she said they really didn't like her. Okay. So talk about like the time, so what went on from the time that you're engaged,
right.
There's maybe some tension between the Hannah side or yes. on the Hannah side, and then you didn't get married until like almost a year and a half later. So what was your life like then? You were living in two different houses.
Correct.
Oh, because you couldn't live together until you were married.
Until we were married, absolutely yes. not. No.
So.
Well, at that point then, your father joins the Navy.
And, okay.
And he went to boot camp, and then he came back. We were like in a waiting period, not knowing what was going to happen next. So it's like I say, it's November of 68, and we decide for July wedding of 69.
Okay.
That was my plan. And we went to his parents, and I said, I'll do whatever it takes to make everybody happy. I'll get married in a Methodist church, even though I was Catholic. All I asked for, back then you were allowed, a priest would come, if you got married in another church that wasn't Catholic, and he would actually give a blessing. But that did not go well. That wasn't acceptable. We tried to work around everything we wanted to make as possible when they fought us every inch of the way. Well, meantime, then, he's already in the service, but he hasn't gotten his papers yet. Well, then he gets called up to go. So it was like May or June, and he shipped out.
I had
out.
Already joined the Navy.
Yeah, you'd already gone through your boot
and
camp.
And 2 weeks later, I got a draft notice in the mail.
From the Army. So it was like May or June when you shipped out on your first excursion with the Navy, so I had we had to cancel the wedding plans because
okay.
besides his parents fighting with us and giving us a hard time,
right.
he wasn't there.
Right.
He left for 6 months. He left for 6 months and floated around out in the ocean for 6 months.
What made you want to join the Army?
Yeah, the Navy.
The Navy.
I'm sorry, Navy.
Well,
you said Army, though.
Well.
No, the Army
gives you the draft.
But I see.
It was Vietnam.
Yeah.
Everybody was
during
going
the period
somewhere.
Of drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And
everybody was going somewhere.
I was hoping for the best, you know?
We didn't want to get drafted
so
in the Navy.
Luckily, at that particular time in life, they take X amount of people that signed up for a quota, and they send them to the East Coast, and they send another large quota like that to the West Coast. I lucked up, I got the East Coast, and I didn't have to go to Nam.
Wow. So, now...
So just to clarify, you volunteered because you knew you were probably going to get drafted.
Yeah, right.
And so you were like, I'd rather not take the chance, I'll just volunteer.
I thought my chances would be better in the Navy to live than be in the Army.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So, thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service, Mr. Hannah, Dad. What so then fast forward, you're in the Navy. How are you communicating? Through letters?
Through letters
yeah.
and payphones.
payphones.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Those are expensive.
Yes. Yes, they are.
So many coins. And our people called collective. He didn't have any money. We called collective. No one takes the charges. Yes. We wrote a lot of letters, like a lot of letters. And I sent a lot of care packages out with cookies and
stuff. Oh, yeah. The guys loved it when I got those care packages.
Because they were out there. They were gone for like 6 months at a time. They're out floating around the ocean. I mean, it did port, but it wasn't the same as.
Right, right.
When you get stuff from home, so.
So you were gone from like June till December?
Till December, yes.
And then did you go out again? What happened in January?
I think we were in port for about a month or two. Yeah. Then we went back out again.
Okay, and so then now it's March of 1970, and you're back on land.
Oh, yeah, this is the best part.
And you're going to get married.
Jacksonville.
So we were in Jacksonville, Florida.
So you were stationed there.
And I put in for leave because we were going to get married.
Okay.
And at that particular time, I was on this oiler, a big oil tanker, and we'd replenish fuel to the ships out at sea. And just before I was ready to leave, I found out the ship was going out to clean the tanks. These are very deep. And there's stairwells down inside these tanks, and they had to clean the tanks. And it's a very, very dirty job. And I found out that was going to happen the next morning, so I hurried up and got off the ship on leave. And I stood on the pier and waved to them as they went out to go clean the tanks.
You're like, peace out.
And so then, Mom, did you come down to Jacksonville and then meet him in Charleston?
We met in Charleston because we were tired of fighting with everybody about getting married. He was, at that point, he was 19. No, he was 20.
Yeah,
you were 20.
I was 20.
You were 20. And the legal age in Pennsylvania is 21 unless your parents consent for you.
So that's why you chose Charleston?
So Charleston, you know, had to be 18. And there was no waiting period. Like in Pennsylvania, it was a 3-day waiting period. In Charleston, you get a license, and the next day you get married. So decided we were tired of fighting, and we didn't, like, know how much longer he was going to be able to stay in the States. Well, he would get shipped to Vietnam. We just decided, so my girlfriend and I flew to Charleston, and he came from Jacksonville to Charleston. And my parents were extremely upset, but so they flew down. They weren't letting me get married without them being there.
Right.
So they flew down, and we got married, and then they flew back home. Yeah, we stayed for a couple of days.
What was the date again?
Friday, March 13th. We figured we'd had some bad luck up to then. We'll make a joke out of it. If things go wrong, we can blame it on the fact that we got married on Friday, March 13th. So that's what we did.
Oh, my gosh.
1970.
March 13th, 1970. So what's something that... So after you get married, then did you...
You had to go back.
Yeah, you had to go back.
I had to go back.
First, we had to go back to Pittsburgh and tell us... Pittsburgh tell us...
Oh, how'd that go?
It was horrible. Absolutely horrible. He called his mother on the phone from my parents' house.
And my mother swore at me. I'm not going to put it on this podcast.
Right.
But
it didn't go well.
It didn't go well.
And then what happened?
So there was a lot of a lot of hate and discontent between us. And he went back to Florida and found a place for me. And the end of April, I left and went to Jacksonville, Florida with him. Quit my job. At that point, I was still at Reed Smith Shaw and McClay, but I became a receptionist at that point. But I wanted to follow my heart and follow him. So I went to Jacksonville.
Nice.
So, wow.
And so then that was the first time you lived together?
That was the first time we lived together. Was in Jacksonville, yes.
We had an apartment.
Down
it right
by
was like
beach.
Two blocks away from the beach.
Down in Jacksonville.
Down on Jack's Beach.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Great expectations.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And so now that you're living together, what is the first thing that you learn about each other that you didn't know before you lived together? It could be big, it could be small. It's just something that you can remember. You're like, oh, wait, I didn't know that, like, you did that. Or, you know, like, what was something that
this
you learned about each other?
Really trivial, but to this day drives me insane. He controls the TV. Back then, you didn't have a remote.
You didn't have a remote, right.
He sat in front of the TV and constantly changed the channel. It didn't matter if I was watching a show and it didn't ask. He just changed
you
the
are,
channel.
You are, Stephen is your
hate
son.
That. It was like, that was like, the rest of my life, am I going to deal with this? It's like, it was something small, but it was so irritating.
That's exactly the answer I'm looking for. So, Dad, what about you? Something that maybe like quickly, like the newlywed game, like you just got married and what didn't you know about your wife that she does?
She can't cook. That's true. When I got
her,
she could not cook.
At all.
Oh my God.
That's she made potato salad and I guess she was just doing it off the top of her head. Like her mom, you know, but her mom knew what she was doing. When she made, the first time she made potato salad, it was like bobbing for potatoes. There was all this like white soupy stuff and the potatoes were floating around in it.
I think from a really early age, I always thought of you guys as like people that found each other and found love like really early, and then you were able to kind of build on your life from there. And that's kind of like my perspective. And I think for a long time I always felt like I wasn't doing it right because I wasn't finding my love and then doing life. Like I was doing all these other things and then eventually found love. Was that something that you aspired to have happen, or is that something that just happened because of fate and you met each other? Or like, did you have that goal in mind that you're like, I want to find my significant other before, or like, how did
well,
do you have any thought
for
to
me,
that?
I did. For okay. me, I did, because back then it was a pretty different time frame than it is now.
Yeah.
And I wanted a home and I wanted a family, and I wasn't somebody that was going to
run away,
sleep with anybody that came along. Let's
right.
put it that way.
Yeah.
So it would get very lonely because people didn't want to take me out because I wasn't,
right.
I wouldn't go to bed with them.
Yeah.
So my mother kept telling me, you will know when the right one comes along. I'm saying, how will I know? You mean all these duds, how am I going
right.
to know? She said, you'll just know when you meet the right one.
Yeah.
And well, the first time he kissed me was horrible. But the next time he kissed me, it was amazing. It was like, she's right. This person is totally different. But I could think, but he's so young. This can't be the right one. He's
right.
too young for me.
Right.
But it was.
Yeah.
And we did build on this too. It just got
yeah.
stronger over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have like any thought about it? Or like, was it just some, because you guys are so young, like, did you even have thoughts on that kind of a thing? Like,
I think we just grew together.
Right.
It was like we meshed right away.
Yeah.
Seriously. It was
yeah.
just like, yeah, we felt pretty fast and it was just like. Yeah.
And we still do.
Yeah, we still feel the same way about each other. It's just got
stronger. Hey, and your mother has
much.
Two quotes. Listen up, everybody.
Okay, listen. We're listening.
All ears.
Everybody wants to be loved, and never say never.
That's right. That's right. Yes, never say never. Absolutely.
Okay, so I mean, I have so.
I
many
have a question. Questions. What about like? So you were in Jacksonville for your first apartment, but when you finished doing your service, what made you want to come back to Pittsburgh?
Because that's where our families were at, and we had no idea what we were going to do. You know, he didn't have a job. I didn't have a job. But that time with the GI Bill, he was going to go to school for welding. So we figured family was back here. So we planned on moving in with my parents because his parents still couldn't stand me. So we decided to move in with my parents. We were there a week. And I had a have and a an obnoxious brother. At that point, he was a lot younger, and him and Ed were butting heads. And they got into a fight.
It was more than butting heads.
Well, Ed can get along with anybody.
Yeah, well, he could with my brother. So my mother took my brother's side, and then Ed said, well, I'm leaving. If you're coming with me or you're staying here. So we left. We had no place to go.
Well, wait a minute. We have to clarify the problem here.
I don't really know this. So
I had just gotten out of the service.
Right.
And I was saving our money so we could buy a car.
Our first car.
And our first car was an orange Volkswagen, 1972.
It was 1971.
I just had it a couple of days, and her brother, he wasn't like 10 years old. He was like 15 years old. He had a boomerang, and he stood about 10 feet away from the car and threw it straight at the car. Well, you know, that was my first car out of the service that I was able to pay cash for. So I did what any normal red-blooded American would do.
What?
I grabbed them by the throat, picked them up off the ground, and was shaking them into a peach tree. And then her mother saw I was picking on her baby, so she came out and hit me in the back with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, my God.
So funny.
At that point in life, I was upset. I said, I'm leaving. I can't stay here another day. I said, if you coming, get in the car. And she got in the car and
we left.
And you found an apartment.
We found an apartment in an area called Crafton, which is also the suburbs of Pittsburgh. Yes, we found an apartment. It was our first apartment. It was a cute apartment. The only problem was, well, it was two problems. We had these weird neighbors who lived upstairs. It was a house. It was divided in apartments. But our apartment had the bathroom in the basement. You had to go out to go to the basement to go to the bathroom.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I used to get
scared. You had to go out in the hallway and go down into the basement.
So I used to get scared at night because I didn't like the people who lived upstairs. But the other night was a nice apartment.
Is it still there?
I think it is
still there. Yeah. That was our first apartment.
That's so funny.
So, yeah.
And so time is going by. Now, what are you doing for work, Dad, at this point?
I'm not doing a damn thing.
Really?
No, you're going to welding school.
Oh, you're going to welding school.
I thought you meant like right
now. No. Like back
in time. We're back in time.
Back in time. 1972.
You got a dented up car from a boomerang.
Yeah.
Went to welding school.
So you're going to welding school.
I went back to work in the filing department.
Yeah, and I was able, while I was going to welding school, to go back to Reed Smith, and I worked in the filing department. And so I was able to make a few bucks and help support.
Well, I was also able to go back to
Reed Smith.
They
were
very nice. They also took me back
after
that. They took me back also. We were back at Reed Smith again together.
That's nice. Yeah. And then from there, you guys went to Erie. Is that correct?
First of all, he went to Pittsburgh Forgings. He left and went to a place called the Forgings.
Yeah, one of the lawyers there was like the vice president of the Forgings. And
that company's not there anymore.
His secretary said, you need a job, Ed? And I said, yeah. She said, oh, Mr. Bain called out, and boom, I got the job.
Cool.
So that was cool.
So he was at the Forgings, and I was still
in Reed Smith. Okay. And then was the next thing you moved to Erie?
Next step was Erie.
So how did that happen?
Our good friends, the Nestors, Don Nestor and Nancy Nestor, they moved up there, and he was in charge of the it was a foundry for General Electric, and he was in charge of the pouring lines, and I was a welder, so I went into the maintenance department.
And so I'm always for anyone listening that is from Erie, I'm sorry, but I'm always so grateful that you didn't end up living in Erie. So What brought you back to Pittsburgh from being in Erie?
Well, the same person, Don Nestor.
It's okay.
We came back.
Got a job at a place called McConway and Tourley.
Okay.
Which is also made castings. They made railroad castings, and I believe they're still down
there. They're still there. Down okay. in Lawrenceville, and, in Pittsburgh, right.
All right.
So, and then we moved to East Liberty.
Yep, then we moved to East Liberty.
And so now it's like, what, 1974?
Yeah.
So when did Eddie, so let's skip to Eddie.
Yeah.
So when did you were like, okay, now we're ready to have kids, or how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, we started working on the situation. It was a slow process. I couldn't get pregnant. It took what was probably late 73, early 74, and we started trying to get pregnant, and I couldn't get pregnant. We went through all this testing, and we did the sperm thing where I had to stick it in my bra and keep it warm and run down and get it checked out. Yeah, it was all,
what?
It was a mental thing, I guess, because later on, I just couldn't get pregnant. They said, you can't think about it. When you have sex, you get to blank it out. Well, the only thing I wanted was a child, so all I think was, is this the time that we make a baby and we weren't making the baby?
Then she finally blanked
and then
out.
And then we decided to buy a house. So I thought, okay, so my mind was elsewhere. I wasn't thinking about babies anymore. And we had our closing, and it was Father's Day, and we found out I was pregnant finally. It was June. It was June of 75, and we were so excited. It's like, finally got pregnant.
Yeah.
We were in our house, and we were painting, and we had his parents come over to see the house, and we tell them.
This is Castle Shannon.
This is Castle Shannon, and we tell them that I'm pregnant.
And how did that go?
How did that go?
That went over like a lead balloon.
So there's a pattern.
Yeah. What were you thinking? How are you going to make your mortgage payment? How are you going to live? At that time, I plan on continuing working. He had a job. I was back. The law firm was so nice. They took me back four different times.
Really?
Yes. They kept taking me back.
That's so... Well, yeah. You must have been really good at what you did.
I guess I wasn't a bad person. They kept taking me back. So I was back at the law firm. He was working. And we had gotten the house.
Yeah.
I planned on keeping while working. We thought, this would have been a problem making the mortgage payment.
Right.
So that's how that started. And then we went for months again. We didn't talk because I was hurt. It was their first... It's going to be their only grandchildren because he's known the child.
Right.
It was, you know, I was just extremely hurt.
Sure.
Hmm. So,
well, that makes sense.
You know, so come November, I got sick. My life started to fall apart. We ended up in the hospital. Eddie comes December 5th. He's really early. He was like 2 pounds, 13 ounces.
Wow.
So my mother-in-law finally comes to see me after all this time in the hospital and says to me, I certainly hope you'll never do this again.
My mom,
she left, and my blood pressure just went through the roof. The nurse goes, what is wrong with you? I said, don't ever come near me again. It was like, if I could go out of the bed today, I'd go and kill her.
My mom had a way with words,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So Eddie was, you know, six weeks old before he finally came out of the hospital. So they didn't see him for the first time. He was over 2 months before they finally saw him.
Wow.
So because of the ordeal I had, and I didn't really have anybody, I had to put Eddie in daycare, and he was so small. He'd come out of the hospital, he was 4 pounds, 13 ounces. Mm. I wasn't putting him in daycare. No. So I stopped working, and your father started working extra hours to make up for the fact that I couldn't work at that time. And eventually I figured, well, I'll go back to work. And then we started the process again, thinking we wanted another child, which just, for some reason, I just wasn't easy to conceive. So.
Yeah. So you had to go through the same stuff, like this.
Well,
same...
I just got frustrated, and finally, it just
happened. Blanked out again.
So, but wait, so let's go back to like, so from the time Eddie was first came home before you had me, what, like, just early on, like, what is like one of the first life lessons that you learned after having a baby? After having Eddie, at least.
I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
Yeah?
I had this tiny little thing. I mean, he was so small. Yeah. I was so afraid I was going to break him.
He was in an incubator for 27 days.
Wow, that's a long time.
He ate an ounce to an ounce and a half every hour and a half to 2 hours. So it was 24 hours. I was constantly getting on feeding because I didn't want to bother Eddie because he was a breadwinner. I was the one who was staying home. So I was like, then I went through this post-mortem thing, I was like crying all the time.
Were you breastfeeding?
No, I couldn't because I got so sick they made me dry my milk if I wasn't on a breastfeed.
So she had
in these little bottles and trying to give him formula. I'm thinking, oh, what have I done? Is he going to make it? It's all my fault. It's like, oh my God, this thing, he's so tiny. Is he going to be okay?
That was like one of the first things you're like, wow, I really just don't know what I'm doing.
I have no idea what I'm doing. It's like, I hope I don't screw this up.
Yeah. And you're still wondering if he's going to be okay.
Yes. And I'm still, yes, he's now 44. I'm still wondering if he's going to be okay.
All right. Well, so, you know, I love these early stories, but like, so how have you managed to stay married and happy for 50 years? What do you think? And I know that life and everything has its ups and downs. I'm not saying that, you know, it's always happy, the best thing right. ever, but how have you managed to stay together for this long? And, you know, what is your secret individually? Say it.
I think communication is very important. Also, I've learned in life, you got to look on both sides. They always say it's greener on the other side of the fence, but guess what? It's not. You look around, what's going on, you see people, we all have our flaws. None of us are perfect, and I know I've driven him crazy over the years, like he's driven me crazy over the years. But we learn to forgive and forget, and we just keep moving on. But you need to communicate in regards to how angry you are or what's going on. You've got to stop, and you've got to talk about it.
That's awesome. Dad?
Your mom's right.
Right answer. Just go ahead.
No, she always said, somebody's got to give in a lot, and she has given in to me a lot of times, which I'm sure you're aware of. But let's see. It's like we've been around each other for so long. We like know what each other is going to say or do. So a lot of times we just automatically do things.
Right.
Because we know what the other one's thinking.
Hmm. Yeah. Right? Nice.
Yeah, that's true.
So now we're in this crazy time. It's 2020. You just celebrated your 50th wedding anniversary, and it was awesome and beautiful, and we were all there. But then right after that, we go into quarantine because of COVID. And I know that you guys have been fairly isolated the whole time and together a lot.
Yes.
So, oh, yeah. So, you know, it's funny because, like, you talked about the first things that you learned about each other in 1970 were mom. You said that mom couldn't cook. And what did you say, mom, in 1970 that you learned? Oh, that he liked to change the channels all the time. Yes. So now it's 2020. We're stuck inside with each other. What have you learned now about each other in this quarantine, being around each other so much? Was there something new that you learned about one another in this time?
Something I learned about your father, which I never thought I would see. He actually has grown, his patience have grown over the years. He was always very short-tempered. But since March, I have been a horrible person. I've had such depression. I'm not sure why, but I've been so mean and so miserable, not on the outside to most people, but I've given your father a really bad time.
Sometimes,
and he's been really
sometimes
patient.
Before she goes to bed, she verbally abuses me.
I just like, and he's been extremely patient with me and put up with my nonsense.
See, Brett,
my crying. I've done a lot of crying lately. I don't know why, but I'm just like, it's so emotional. I'm just in this really dark place ever since this pandemic. It's like, what's going to happen? That's just like, there's so much uncertainty and unemployment. I'm just worried about everybody, my family and everybody else. It's like, I don't know how it's going to end. Yeah. It's scary.
What about you, Dad? What have you learned about mom in this quarantine?
She's very efficient. She really is. We have, she always keeps track of when and where we're supposed to go places. And she has like this master like calendar that lays on the kitchen, and that helps us lay people to go over and check the calendar and see what we're supposed to be doing, you know.
So she's the organizer.
Yes.
And you're just noticing this now?
she's been like this ever since I got her.
I know. I'm just kidding. Give me your hard time.
Granted, now all of a sudden you realize, oh
she
does do something. She has done something all these years.
Oh my God.
No, she's great. you know.
Of course I know, but people don't know. But you know, there's so many things we could talk about, but those are like all the topics I kind of wanted to hit. I guess there's maybe another question. I guess in the beginning, you know, we talked about what did you learn quickly when you first had a baby. So now what have you learned from having kids for this long in 2020? Now what's something that we've taught you. Be careful what you say.
We should have had kids.
Go ahead.
You just taught me to expect the unexpected, because you and your brother, I never know what's going to happen, and you have expanded my horizon. I grew up in a little white Catholic box, and I didn't know so much. I didn't even know how to swear back then. You guys have taught me a lot about the world, about people,
in the name.
About swearing.
Relationships, about swearing. I swear a lot. You've made me a more loving, understanding person. You got me out of that little white box that I was in. It wasn't a bad place, but that's what it was back then. I just didn't know. You know, that's the way it was. I didn't know anything about life, actually. Well, you guys have taught me a lot.
That's a nice gift.
Yeah.
It is. What about you, Dad? Be careful.
Well, like I tell Eddie, and I'm sure I've told you before, a lot of times, like your mom says, we worry about you guys constantly. You know, from day to day, not from like some people, they don't care about their children. So anyhow, the thing is, once in a while, when you do stupid human tricks, or Eddie does stupid human tricks, our words are, we cannot die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you also got to remember, if you ever have a family, which I'm hoping you will, they don't come with a handbook.
Right.
And every child is different. You just got to go with it and see where the personality is. But you got to have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
A lot of patience. Which I have learned over the years. I wasn't the most patient person when I was younger, either. As we all know, your father wasn't either. But he has definitely, his patience has definitely grown from the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
From the pandemic, sure. He's definitely improved.
Wow.
Well, I think you've been amazing parents in the 12 years that I've known you. I'm super
it's not easy.
Grateful to have you as my in-laws.
And I am, of course, very grateful to have you as parents, because I feel like I'm always trying to, you know, just live up to who you are, and you guys are always inside my head no matter what, and so I just want to say I love you.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
Not
love you very much, too.
So, now we're going to move on, before I cry, we're going to move on to a segment we call Spotlight on Love.
So what happens in this segment, we do it every episode, if you've not listened to our podcast, and we have a listener or a follower on Instagram send us a question, or they want advice around relationships or dating or anything with their family, and then we have our guest or ourselves give completely unqualified advice to these people to help them
that's
with
fun.
Whatever they ask.
Okay,
so Stephen, we had somebody from Instagram write, and it's a pretty lengthy.
It was a very lengthy question by somebody. I'll leave
what's
him anonymous. His name is Jeremiah.
Yeah, from Jeremiah.
On Instagram. I've kind of condensed the question because he wrote a
it's
lengthy
really
question. Anyways, so this is my version of his question. He wrote, I am talking to this guy and he says we are just friends, but it feels like there have been times that it has felt like more, even though nothing has happened physically. He tells me he is with an on-again, off-again boyfriend, and he has asked me to go to Savannah with him for a week, and he has planned socially distanced activities. It all feels very unclear what our relationship is, but I want to go because quarantine has been so lonely. And then he's like, ah, help me. I want to go and be with him, but does this sound like bad news?
I wouldn't go. If
traveling.
If he's got a boyfriend, it's on again, off again. Wait till it's totally off, because you're only going to complicate things, and you're the ones that get hurt in the end.
Yes. Dad.
And right now, I wouldn't be traveling anywhere, no matter what. You're going to have face-to-face contact with some people that you don't know, and it's kind of scary. It really is.
It really is.
So
yeah. Also, this guy just sounds like, I mean, in my head, this guy sounds like he's manipulating the whole situation. I would say just stay out of it, because it's like somebody else's mess you do not want to get in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, what they're all saying, and also just like, I'm sure there's so many other fish in the sea.
Yes.
Like, why stay with somebody who's just not able to be available for you.
The right person's out there. Yeah. Be patient. You will find them.
Yeah.
They are out there waiting for you.
Yeah. So I would say, yes, it's bad news. Yes. Steer clear.
Listen to Marcella Hanna.
Yeah, that's listen right. to my mom.
That's right. There are other people out there. Look for the right one you know.
I love that. That is really good.
She's always told me what I've needed to hear. I may not have wanted to hear it, but she's definitely always told me the right thing. Whether I've chosen to listen to it or not is a whole other thing, but you should listen to her today.
Well, thank you both for being guests on our episode today.
Oh, thank you for having us. It was very nice.
Pretty special to have you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We owe you big time. Where can people follow you on Instagram?
I have an Instagram account, but I don't look at it anymore.
So where are all your fans? On Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Facebook. Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for being our guest today, and we love you so much.
We love you, too. We're very proud of both of you also. You're amazing.
Maybe later we can be on again, and I'll share some really interesting stories about my mom.
That's the late night version. Okay. We'll do an IGTV or something. All right, and to all of our listeners, don't forget to love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.